is Friday. It's March 11th, 2016, and we are the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams, heard Saturdays on WGN Radio from 1 to 3. Steve Bertrand is here from WGN Radio News. Steve Bertrand on books. Steve Bertrand travel. Hi, Steve Bertrand. How are you?
And the host of the Business Lunch. Thank you, John Williams.
Yeah, I should probably put that first.
Well, that's okay.
Eric Zorn is here. He's a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Eric.
Hey.
Welcome back. You were at the True False Film Festival.
I was. I had a great time. I missed you down there. You were there a couple years ago.
I was. I've got to get back.
Are they still talking about it?
Oh, they are. There's like Sondel plaques up where he ate and stuff. It's really something else.
Kristen McQuarrie joins us, of course, the columnist and editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, John.
John Kasich was in town Wednesday, Hillary Clinton yesterday, Ted Cruz is in town today, I think for Governor Rauner, right, and his own campaign. Then you got Bernie Sanders in the suburbs, and Donald Trump will hold a rally tonight at UIC. Since our last podcast, Chris Christie and Dr. Ben Carson, who both endorsed Donald Trump, and the GOP debate last night was described as civil, as long as you aren't one of Earth's 1.6 billion Muslims.
Not all of them, a lot of them.
The headline, I think, was he doubled down on Muslim commentary, which, you know, each week we've been talking for months now. Trump continues to amaze, impress, steamroll, and horrify me. And him doubling down on the Muslim thing, I think, is just one of the reasons I don't sleep at night.
Well, early this morning, John, I don't know if you're aware of it yet, but in Dearborn, Michigan, where they publish the Arab American News, I think that's the newspaper, police were called with two men with hammers, were apparently trying to break into the building while workers inside were trying to publish the newspaper. They didn't get in and they ran away. But police are saying they're worried about it because it was clear that there were people inside while they were trying to break in.
Somebody explain to me what the danger from Muslims is. I mean, I know what happened on the 11th of September. And I know San Bernardino, but I really don't grasp the attack of radical Islam in this country that he's talking about. Can anybody help me with this?
Well, I mean, it's clearly dangerous from radical Islam, from terrorism, right? I mean, it's not every day that we're worried about it, but there's clearly that danger, right? I mean, I think the problem is that he's taking this extremist set of Islamic fundamentalist terrorists, and he's applying it to all the people who follow Islam around the world, and it's unfair, but it's also unwise. And I thought Marco Rubio made a very good point. I think it was Rubio in the debate last night, where he's saying, "Look, we have to work with. I mean, Muslims are our allies around the world in many places, and we're not going to solve this problem by alienating all of them. It's a huge faith, and there are great swaths of it that are." Cooperative with us and whose help we're going to need in solving some of these problems.
And they're Americans. Yeah. I mean, he raised the point that, you know, we have Muslims fighting our wars.
And buried in our cemeteries.
And buried in our military cemeteries, yeah.
Well, what a great line. He said, I'm not interested in being politically correct, but I'm interested in being correct. And I thought, what's the upside, except that you might get elected, to fanning the fears of Islamophobia? We need to be diligent. I get that. But I also think it makes the world more dangerous for Americans, this sort of hyperbolic speech of his. Soldiers, citizens, civilians, do you want to travel in the Middle East or even Europe with a president who's kind of declaring war on all Muslims? I think it's bad policy for this country.
Well,
but it's effective. I mean, that his position and, you know, to distinguish himself early on among this very crowded, what once was a very crowded Republican field, he said we should, you know, no longer accept Syrian refugees. And that is part of the reason that he's getting so much support, because a lot of Americans agree with him, unfortunately.
And John, I think if I can take what you said a little further, it's just twisted. I mean, since the four of us have been together, an Uber driver shot up Kalamazoo, Michigan. Two people did an assault-style ambush at a backyard party outside Pittsburgh. You know, people, we are killing each other all of the time, and we don't seem to care about that. But you have the San Bernardino shooting and the fear of other attacks, and we run around like our heads on fire.
Well, these African-American protesters that show up at Trump rallies take their life into their own hands. Witness that kid who got punched in the face as he was being escorted out the other day.
Puncher says he might have to shoot him next time.
I know that was talk about doubling down. But imagine if those were Muslims, people who were wearing, you know, religious appropriate garb. Suppose they start showing up at these things. I don't know. Trump doesn't seem to care or understand that he's inciting violence. And then he wallpapers over it afterwards. But that's very troubling to me. It really is.
Yeah, I don't have a great feeling about this event tonight in Chicago. We're taping Friday morning here. And there's a big rally, a Trump rally at UIC, at the pavilion there. It's at 6 p.m. tonight.
Yeah.
And they're round-the-clock protests have already started there. I know a number of people who say they're going to go down there. They're going to try to disrupt the event. And, you know, feelings are running really high when you have these things like these attacks on people in the audience. And this is not the first time someone has been assaulted or battered even at a Trump rally. This is not going well. And this is the kind of place, Chicago is the kind of place where, you know, he's not in comfortable territory for him. Chicago is not Trump country.
And, well, he's leading in the polls.
Not in Chicago, he's not.
Oh, really? Are you sure of that? I'll bet it's close. In Illinois, he's up 10%.
You know, I don't know what the sliver of Republican voters in Chicago, but I know that he's up in Illinois, but I think, you know, in the city of Chicago and probably even the metro area, I doubt that he's ahead.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. You're absolutely right about that. But among Republican voters in Cook County and Chicago, even in the suburbs, Trump is winning. That's the quandary for me. I looked at Real Clear Politics. Hillary beats Trump across the board in the polls. Sanders beats Trump across the board in the polls. Think about that. But Trump wins in the Republican Party and the conservative movement. It's not even fair to say the Republican Party or the conservative movement. But Trump is the leading candidate. I can't sort of figure those two things.
Is it
in my
too
head.
Late? Is it too late? Does everyone think it's too late for the Republicans to mount an effort? I think you were saying,
yeah, John,
Steve, that just before we
John, you might not have seen this, but on Friday, the communications director, and Ed Marco Rubio is quoted too, for Marco Rubio's campaign, is urging his supporters in Ohio to vote for John Kasich on Tuesday. So you have a sitting candidate who's going to be on the ballot in Ohio telling his supporters, don't vote for me, vote for John Kasich instead.
Because Rubio knows he won't win Ohio, but Kasich's got a chance.
He said Kasich's got the better chance than I do.
And it's winner take all. I don't know how many delegates are up for grabs,
that's unprecedented. That has to be unprecedented.
And Kasich's people said, "Well, we're going to win without Rubio's supporters."
Rubio, who couldn't even fill. Right. Did you see that Twitter photo that floated around? He was supposed to have a rally at a high school and it was completely empty.
Was that the football stadium
yes.
one?
Yeah.
No, and there's also the possibility in Florida, isn't there? That I mean, it does make sense to me that Rubio does this. It would make sense for me if Cruz did the same favor for Rubio in Florida.
But Cruz wants to.
I know, and I don't quite understand that because Cruz's end game has got to be a one-on-one matchup with Trump, and if Rubio doesn't win Florida, if Trump wins Florida, that makes the hurdle
right. Well,
much higher.
I think Cruz's thought is if he goes into Florida hard and splits the anti-Trump vote with Rubio, it's a mortal wound to Rubio. So in a way, Cruz, you might argue Cruz is campaigning hard in Florida to take votes away from Rubio and increase the chances that Donald Trump will win. So he's nourishing the calf before he slaughters it later. That's what he's hoping.
Wow, that's a nice analogy. Mm. I thought Eric Zorn would have been crowing by now that his long-ago prediction that it would be a brokered convention and that Paul Ryan would emerge as the party's favorite, they are actually talking about that scenario. It sure doesn't seem possible, Eric, but you pegged that a long, long time ago.
It's going to be really difficult for the party to deny Trump the nomination if he comes to Cleveland.
They can't do it. They cannot do that. I mean,
why do you say that? Well, they can.
Because people are legitimately voting for him, for the Republican Party establishment, which is what all these people are rebelling against, to swoop in and try to erase what is actually a movement. This is not just people who like Donald Trump. This is a movement on the Republican side, just like Bernie Sanders is a movement on the Democratic side. for the establishment to come in and do that would just be, it would be devastating.
But why do you think they would do that, Kristen? Why?
I don't think they would.
Think they're going to try?
Do you think is for this whole conversation, Kristen? I mean, why does that conversation even exist? Is it the brokered convention? Is it because they hate Trump so much and what he's done to the party? Or is it because they don't think that Trump can beat Hillary Clinton?
Because they don't think Trump can beat Hillary Clinton, correct?
Exactly. So, I mean, I get that. I don't blame them for doing that. You say, oh, my God, we can't do it. We can't do it. Well, the kids are going to wreck it if they vote for Trump, because then you'll have President Hillary Clinton.
Okay,
if they
choose someone else, the kids are going to wreck it, too, because the people who voted for Trump are not going to vote for the somebody else in November, probably, right? So they're maybe doomed either way. So although I think Trump could easily win. But the question is, what does more damage to the party long-term for the next election?
You're exactly right, Steve. That's the question. The question is the party more damaged by Donald Trump at the head of the ticket this year, or is it more damaged if by the tumult at the convention followed by an establishment choice like a Ryan or a Romney, maybe? I mean, Romney
lose gracefully. Is that what you're saying?
Not even. I mean, it's possible. I mean, Hillary Clinton is not. She's a damaged candidate. She's not.
I know.
People don't love her, and it's not impossible to think that someone like a Ryan or a Romney could come in and run a quick, hard campaign. People don't love Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's going to have a hard time.
All those people who showed up at their polling places or who caucused for Trump or one of the other Republican candidates would completely rebel if the establishment swoops in and tries to basically erase the democratic process. I would be outraged if that actually happened.
But if he doesn't...
I mean, the reason that the rise of Trump is because the GOP establishment has ignored the party and has not advanced policy positions that they promised to take on the campaign trail, and people are ticked off about it. And that's why they're voting for Donald Trump.
Kristen, I've also... Go ahead, Steve, finish that.
Well, I was going to say, technically, they're not voting for Trump, right? We're voting for delegates. Delegates
to
the
campaign. You're going
to play
that card?
Well,
really?
Just give me 20 more seconds.
Man.
I don't even want to. But they're voting for delegates to the convention who are going to decide who wins.
You tell that to people. Okay, I'm sorry.
Right?
I'm interrupting you.
So what's the point of that, Steve?
So it's just a little more cover if they're voting for delegates and the delegates can't vote for Trump.
Trump is drawing crowds of 20 to 30,000 people wherever he goes.
They're
showing up.
They're hateful spectacles. They're shameful spectacles. These crowds. By the way, maybe somebody's listening.
You can't paint with a broad brush like that, John. I mean, there's a lot of there are a lot of people who legitimately believe in him, who are Americans just like you. I mean, you cannot pin a couple rabble rousers in a crowd on Donald Trump. He doesn't condone the behavior. He has said so.
He said he wanted to punch reporters himself from the stage.
Well, reporters, yes.
Yeah,
he's called out
reporters by name and pointed to them. And
listen, I am not defending Donald Trump's words that come out of his mouth, but to blame him or to somehow paint with such a broad brush that these rallies are, disgusting spectacles is just not true.
Well, what Kristen is identifying is quite true, which is that the Trump movement, the support for him is based on a lot of economic anxiety. I think basically that's what it's rooted in. I think that's a lot of what the Sanders phenomenon is about also, which is that, all these people are worked up by the nativism and the authoritarianism of Trump, but they are so frustrated by politics and what's gone on in this country in the last 20 years and the stagnant middle class incomes and jobs flowing overseas, and these are not easy problems to solve. And I think the solutions that these guys are throwing out from both sides, the broad solutions are superficial and phony, and yet they're at least resonating with people, people are using them to express this kind of anger. And yeah, you get this whole clutch of people, some of whom are awful racists and terrible people, but this is this movement, and I have to say, I am certainly one of the journalists, one of the observers who didn't properly understand this phenomenon earlier, who just thought, oh, Trump is a reality TV clown, this isn't going anywhere, and it's something that we are all needing to get our minds around. And I think what Kristen's saying is essentially true, which is that this is something that we can't just say, oh, these are just a bunch of uneducated crazy people who hate all foreigners.
Right.
There's a lot more to what's going on here, and And those of us who have failed to grasp it are just sitting here spinning out on a podcast.
Yeah, I get that, Eric. That's right. It's just too bad, though, that the person that has done that has all of these other unfortunate attributes. I mean, you know, couldn't somebody more palatable to the rest of us have told us that? Because this package of Donald Trump, I think part of it trumps the other. Yeah, he's captured something, but I still don't know how in good conscience you can say, thank you for articulating how I feel about it. Oh, my God, I'm going to ignore all that other stuff.
Kristen, I agree with
you.
I mean, a lot of these people, a majority of these people are legitimately angry about Washington and more so about seeing their jobs go and manufacturing and all that. I mean, I get that. I understand that. But also a majority of them polled favor the idea of banning people from this country by their religion. So I'll give you A, but B makes them... I don't understand that. I mean, it's not only contrary to how this country was founded, it's contrary to all of our laws, and it's just kind of not smart.
That's the problem. Well, that's the problem. That's the problem. I mean, why didn't Kasich say all of this stuff, or Rubio, or Cruz, or, I don't know, Chris Christie, somebody who, and maybe it's because there's no cult of personality there, right? Maybe they were saying stuff like this, but... It didn't catch. You know, people weren't listening to it the way they do when Trump says it because he peppers it with all of those other things. Let me ask you guys about the Chicago Tribune real quick. They are not endorsing a Democratic candidate for president at all, if I read that correct, right? Is that unusual? And why did they take that position, Kristen?
It is unusual. And I think we couldn't... in good conscience, write a full-throated endorsement for either one of them. We've written a lot about Hillary Clinton, the email scandal, the times that she's been caught, you know, not telling the full truth about what was on her server, what was classified, what wasn't. We've written about the Benghazi questions and the Susan Rice issue, and I think it just, you know, and we are a fiscally conservative page. We don't really weigh in very much on social issues at all. And so to advance either one of these candidates who are promising, you know, Bernie Sanders for one, $13 trillion in new spending over the next 10 years, we just, you know, we couldn't get behind it. And she
Hillary's up 67-25 in Illinois.
Yeah, she's going to win easily, but we don't endorse based on who's going to win. That's not our role.
But there was a sense in the lack of endorsement of Kasich. I know I don't participate in the endorsement process, but I feel like Kasich is the one who sort of speaks more to Tribune values than any of the other candidates. In some ways, the editorial just sort of said, "Well, he's just not organized enough. He's not right." Was that kind of the sense that Kasich is not a strong enough candidate?
I read
to
it
vote
that
for?
He said that it wasn't winnable for him, which struck me as odd because it doesn't seem winnable for Rubio. I mean, that's what jumped out at me about that editorial.
It probably
did. That should be beside the point anyway. Winnable. I mean, is that what an endorsement is? Who
no.
could win, or is
I,
it?
Well,
who
they were their words. It wasn't mine.
I think
they wrote it.
I think somebody. I think the word viable was in there or something. And that's a completely fair criticism. I mean, Rubio is no more, probably less viable,
right.
perhaps than Kasich. Kasich came in and met with us. I liked him, you know, but endorsements are a group effort, and they're much more top down when you're talking about the presidential race. The editor and publisher weighs in, and
both of them,
right? One person now.
Wait, is it a weighted vote, or is it a democratic vote, or how does that work? No, I don't know. I never thought of
that.
Well,
they caucus, Steve. They break into small groups, and then they determine who has the most viable votes for the endorsement, and then they all come together in the room. Is that what happens?
Yes, I am one and a half. Caucus. We debate around a table, and then the endorsement is essentially decided by the editor and the publisher. At least that's been my experience with just two presidential elections. That's not the case with, you know, when we're making an endorsement for a General Assembly seat or state Senate. But in my experience going through this twice now, it's the prerogative of the editorial page editor to have a heavier weighted vote.
I see. I didn't know that. Speaking of state representative votes, John, I didn't mean to just hijack you, but are you following the Duncan race at all?
Well, so can I just, here's what I, is it Duncan or Durkin? Duncan, right?
Duncan.
Yeah.
Duncan.
Why is Barack Obama endorsing Juliana Stratton for the Illinois 5th House District over the incumbent. And you know, why is he going to something that local?
I heard this morning there's been nearly $5 million spent on that.
Is it $5 million now?
It was over four.
It was three, yeah.
And that they'd expect there to be 10,000 votes in that primary.
They could just give everybody a check.
Right. I'm sure they are.
I guess I know what it is. It's really about Madigan wants this Duncan out because Duncan didn't always vote with the rest of the state's Democratic Party. But that's Madigan's business. Why is Barack Obama carrying the bucket for Mike Madigan? Somebody explain that to me.
I did a comment on this. I mean, certainly one reason is that Duncan kind of did a little preening during Obama's speech on February 10th when he was down in Springfield. He was talking about the importance of bipartisanship and working with the other party. Duncan stands up and goes, "Yeah, heck yeah," I think is what he said. And Obama sort of turned to him and said, "You know, we'll talk later, Duncan, sit down." And Duncan then took that "we'll talk later" segment and used it in a radio commercial that made it sound like Obama was endorsing Duncan. And this race is really important because it is a proxy battle between the Rauner-backed forces and the Madigan-backed forces. I mean, there's, you know, there are PACs involved and so on, but that's essentially what it is. And Duncan did break with the Democrats. He's not the only Democrat who's broken, but he's the only one who's become a target because he did it in such a strange and opportunistic way. It didn't seem to be a principled vote against Madigan. It just seemed to be like he was just trying to go off and get his own.
Well, wasn't there one huge issue that he bucked the trend on? Wasn't it a big one?
He skipped a vote that they needed the 71st vote to override Rauner's veto of this bill that would have kind of decreased Rauner's ability to negotiate with AFSCME. So
he was the vote that thwarted Madigan.
Pretty much. He was in New York. Right. He didn't even come. It was in December. They all came. I think it was December or September. They all came back to override this vote.
Including one of the reps who was on her deathbed, right? She subsequently died.
Yes.
All that explains why Madigan doesn't like this guy. But was it his personal antics that got Obama into it then, do you think, Eric? That little display in Springfield?
I think it might have been. I mean, he obviously has roots here. It's not like he's going into some random state. He served in the General Assembly, so he knows these people. He may even know Duncan. I'm not sure.
Duncan said they were good pals.
Well, then,
but
then
that's Duncan.
Not anymore.
right.
And you know, and this really is about if Madigan cannot oust Duncan, who openly defied. I mean, it was a quiet defiance at first, and then it became an open defiance. He's now saying that he believes in the people. He doesn't believe in. He called Madigan's style of politics plantation politics. So he has really thrown down a challenge to Madigan. If he can, and this is a heavily Democratic district. It went like 80-20 for Pat Quinn last time. So this is, and if Madigan can't exercise any control over this district of getting out somebody who is openly defiant.
But that's not
him.
Madigan's district.
It's not Madigan's district, but it's Madigan's house, right?
It's veto-proof majority, yeah.
I got to tell you, do you hear yourself, Eric? I mean, talk about it. He doesn't get to do that. The local voters get to pick their local person, and that the president of the United States, at the behest of the speaker,
ask the same question about Bruce Rauner. Rauner's doing the same thing. Rauner doesn't live there either. Bruce Rauner and all these Republican PACs that are backing Duncan, they don't live there either.
I think it's legitimately strange that the leader of the free world takes time out of his day to cut a television ad for a local House race in Illinois. I mean, I think part of it is
of the same party, even
of the same party. This is a contested Democratic primary
because they see. Everybody sees this as a really pivotal. This is the most important election, I think. The most important primary election in ages.
Madigan screwed Obama at every turn when he was first running for office, when he first ran for U.S. Senate. Why would Obama in any way try to help out the speaker by doing this? Because that's what he's doing.
Because this also plays into a whole larger story about Republican control of state houses around the country and about what the direction of the states. Rauner's trying to take our state.
A Democrat is going to win that seat. A Democrat is going to win that seat.
But is it going to be a Democrat who votes like a Democrat or a Democrat who votes like a Republican?
Duncan doesn't really do that, does he?
No. Duncan has been a... I can't point to one vote he's taken in the past 12 years that has not been party line. He was the leader of the Legislative Black Caucus for a while. I mean,
But wait, why are we surprised that if a guy you know, thumps the speaker in a huge vote, that the speaker's not going to come back and get him. I mean, that's not surprising. That's a party
thing. Come
back
and get him. What does that mean, Steve? Come back and get him.
He's going to put one of his own people in there to replace him. I mean, that's
you
what.
Can't
that's
do
what,
that. That's,
of course
that's
you can.
Not...
That's what. What are you talking? What? Why do you think?
If I was
why
a
do you think in
Illinois...
Washington there's a Senate? There's a Senate campaign committee for the Republicans and the Democrats because the party is trying to build a majority in people around the country.
The
speaker is trying to build his majority and his people around
the state.
He
will not tolerate any dissent,
well,
and that
well,
is
that's
different.
All it
You've
is.
Got...
It's just a little dissent.
Yes, he did,
it's
but
a big
he did.
Dissent.
Kristen, he did.
He's
he
not
tolerates,
swapping parties.
He tolerates Jack Franks. You know, nobody's running against Jack Franks. He's one of those.
Right, and in D.C., the speaker tolerates the Freedom Caucus, and pushback should be welcomed. I mean, the fact that the speaker wants
yeah, right.
to take out Duncan
exactly.
because he's a little rebellious.
He's a lot rebellious, and now he's yeah. going to be bought and paid for
he's
by
not,
Rounders.
But that's actually not true. He missed that. He's not an override vote, but Madigan still has, what, a 19-seat majority?
Is he taking money from Rounders PACs or PACs associated
oh, yeah.
with Rounder?
Yes.
Is he?
Oh,
oh
yes.
Yeah, a
okay.
lot.
Oh,
absolutely
well,
he is.
I mean...
It's a really important. It's
well, I guess
important,
he can turn the money down.
And,
Steve.
And by the same token, well, by the same token, Rounder is going after McCann, who's an incumbent Republican state senator
mm-hmm.
in the Springfield area. He's going after him because McCann doesn't vote with Rounder on labor issues, and you know, and that's legitimate, I think, for
it's
him.
Party
to say,
politics.
Yeah, it is. It's
well, if I was in those districts. Particularly Duncan's. But just as a citizen of Illinois, which I'm currently not, I would feel like
that's okay, you can
so, so manipulated, such a pawn, or I'd be watching my representative being a pawn to some bigger machine. And talk about taking the people for granted. I think this is just a spectacle. It's just it's pure Illinois or Chicago politics, but it is a spectacle.
That I
there,
agree with.
There,
that,
so there.
I think we can all agree around the table on that. It's a spectacle.
An expensive one.
No. $5 million.
Well, you know, it was four. It was over four, so I added it because there's a few days left. It's going to be fun.
You know, I like the resume of that Jason Gonzalez guy. Speaking of Mike Madigan, though, he's the one that's running against him, right? And
Madigan. Now we're talking about Madigan's district now.
Yeah. Right. And in his own race, which boy, I guess he's going to win re-election, right, Eric? But this Gonzalez guy is amassing some money, and he's just an interesting story. And the fact that he's reared his head, Madigan just comes in and crushes him like bug, just, which is an expression.
Crush you like bug.
But I think he was an interesting story. There was a nice story about him in the Trib today about his background, his criminal past, when he was a teenager using stolen credit cards and yet still getting degrees from Duke,
yeah, I gotta say
MIT,
that,
and Harvard.
The attack on him for being a former felon or whatever. I mean, first of all, his record's been expunged. But he was a teenager. He was
And Madigan has people standing outside of polling booths
with signs
calling him a convicted felon. Yeah. And then they pretended, well, anyway, they pretended they weren't involved in the Stratton Duncan race.
Who, them?
The speaker's staff. And we happen to have a reporter standing outside the campaign headquarters when a huge Julia Stratton truck came by and unloaded all these signs right at Madigan's headquarters.
Timing. This is kind of a non sequitur, but I'll just ask it because Erica and I were trading a lot of email about that this week. The president did not go to Nancy Reagan's funeral, and I simply asked the innocent question, should he have? Eric, should President Obama have gone to Nancy Reagan's funeral?
Well, I think he had some previous commitments that were, I don't know what they were, but I mean, I guess the question is it...
Pal around
is it,
with Canada.
Is it...
That was fun.
It's just not something that's usually done. And the reporting points out that Reagan did not go to Bess Truman's funeral and George W. Bush didn't go to Lady Bird Johnson's funeral. This is not something that happens. I mean, just like with the Scalia funeral, I think you go to funerals when you possibly can. I just think it's something you do.
The First Lady was there.
Yes. Oh, okay. Right. But I'm saying that you know when you possibly can, you should go to show respect and so on. But it's not something that like, I think to point out to hold Obama to this standard that no other presidents have been held to. I think it's just hypocritical.
Well, I wondered if he doesn't go, then there's some criticism. If he does go, then you could point out the history of presidents not doing that, but Barack Obama trying to insert himself into that. You know. Optic.
I'm pretty sure he's busy. I mean, we're talking about the leader of the free world. Iran is testing nuclear missiles this week. We've got ISIS problems. We just found out Putin's press secretary was murdered in a Washington, D.C. hotel. I mean, are we really going to get our underwear in a bundle over the president not sitting through a funeral? I don't understand it. I think it's ridiculous.
I think he's going to South by Southwest, so I'm not sure that it's quite that noble.
He is. Oh, he is. That is the conflict, isn't it?
It's the first time a sitting president has been there.
But, I take Kristen's point. I think, you know, what is protocol, what usually happens in such situations, and, you know, you make a choice not to do that. And to pick on Obama for it just seems, well, it's politics as usual.
Supreme Court. We need a it's stupid panel, like 9 people. You can pick them. And when certain things like this come up, you know, you'd have to go through that panel. Sometimes, like, you might have something here.
The stupidity panel ruled 7-3
right.
Today.
They should have 12 it's stupid declarations a year. And, you know, they could use one here.
And then
it's
you have
stupid.
To move on. Yeah. If you get voted, it's stupid.
Shut up.
No one can talk about it without being put in prison, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Or the Illinois legislature.
Has now risen to that level. Okay, kids, it's time for the recommendations. Steve Bertrand, I didn't call on you last week, and I know it kind of hurt your feelings.
What do you want
to recommend that people watch, listen to, or read?
Okay, get this. When do you think BMI, the body mass index, came into effect, was first sort of discussed? When in the history of the world?
9 years. 90s,
the 90s, late 90s. Yeah.
19th century. There's a book out called The End of Average. It's written by Todd Rose, a Harvard professor, and he talks about how we measure ourselves now against the average. The average 9-month-old is walking, or the average 65-year-old is doing this. And his point is that no one is absolutely average. And so when we do that, it's a terrible way to measure. He wants to throw out diplomas because college diplomas are based on seat time. How much time your butt is in a seat in a classroom on your given subject. He said instead we should give certificates of experience or excellence or things like that. But it's just a really cool book that looks at – and when this guy, Ketelet was his name, European social scientist, came upon this sort of the averages in the – I think it was the 1860s. No one had ever considered that. We'd never measured ourselves against the average person. And he was the first person to do it. He did it by looking at suicides in countries and learned that suicides were sort of the same year to year in certain countries. Everyone before that thought it was such a sort of ghastly event that they couldn't imagine you could weigh it by an average. They were taken aback by that. Huh. So Rose says from then on, we've focused too much on what's average, and it's time to move from that to what he calls the science of individualism. The End of Average.
A few years ago. What's the name of that book, Steve?
The End of Average.
The End of Average. A few years ago, there was a book about the average American. They actually found him. You know, a guy in Kansas, married father of
2.3 children.
Right. When Ketelet came up with this, everyone wanted to be the absolute average. That's the goal.
How about you, Kristen? What are you thinking about this week?
St. Patrick's Day.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you see the list from Wallet?
So South Side.
I know. Well, the South
Chicago,
Side.
Chicago. Not in the top 10.
Really?
For St. Patrick's Day parades.
Now, the parade runs near your house in the South Side, right?
2 blocks.
The South Side area. And are they still peeing all over your yard and everything? Have they gotten that under control?
It is a family-friendly event now. Uh-huh. You're not allowed to bring coolers to the parade route. There are porta-potties everywhere.
Nice.
Yes, we leave our coolers
at your
house.
We cleaned it up, yes.
So that's your recommendation, go to the South Side Parade?
Yeah, listen to some Irish music, some fiddle. I'm sitting next to a very talented musician, Eric Zorn.
You most certainly are, yeah.
I'd like to hear him play some Irish fiddle this weekend.
What's your recommendation, Eric Zorn?
Well, I wanted to just recommend my favorite political tweet of the week. We really like this. It's by Kashana Cawley, and her tweet is, "The presidential debates will continue until morale improves."
Just like the beatings,
The
huh?
beatings, just like the beatings.
No kidding. My recommendation this week is from a previous week's recommendation. Remember, Eric, when you told us to listen to the podcast Sleep With Me? I listened to it and interviewed the guy last week, and while you were away, Eric, so I'm just bringing it up again. What a delightful guy, and what an interesting podcast. And the tone of the man's voice and the delivery is hilarious. And he posts 3, as you said, Eric, 1-hour podcasts a week. It's called Sleep With Me. And you put your buds in, you lay down, and he starts talking to you. and it's almost hypnotic. You end up going to sleep. That's his objective.
Have you tried it?
No, I haven't tried it, but I don't have any trouble sleeping either. So I,
well, you, those I, of I you with clean consciences ever seem to do very well with this.
I play that game called Worry Jeopardy, where you lie there in bed at night, and across the top you have all of the categories, like what was that sound in the basement? Will I ever be able to retire? Health of my children? And then, you know, different values below. That's the game I play at night. So maybe I should listen to Sleep With Me. And that's our podcast for this week. I'm John Williams. Eric Zorn and Krista McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune join us, as does Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Our engineer is Bob Ferguson. Our producer is Kristen Decker. We'll drop another one next week.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!
The Mincing Rascals podcast is distributed by the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can listen on the WGN Plus app or online at WGNplus.com, or you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes.